Hello, Chin Waggers. Paul Giamatti speaking.
And Stephen Asma here.
Steve, question for you. Have you ever taken a walk and felt deeply inspired? You discovered something fun on that walk. You learned something new about an old friend.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice, right? Maybe you're the kind of guy who looks around. You look around as you're walking. You think, oh, wow, you know, that bank used to be a library, or that Dollar Tree used to be a grove of actual trees, you know? And, well, there's a podcast about that stuff now. Right, Steve?
That's right. In fact, join comedian and actor Alan McLeod for Walking About, a new podcast that tracks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and community.
In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a stroll
and see where the sidewalk takes them. They'll discover new places and learn more about one another. And guess what? You will too.
Yeah, very cool. So lace up your podcast shoes and listen to Walking About, out now wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to Chinwag. I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
And as promised, Chinwaggers, here's a little extra bonus wag for your listening enjoyment.
Bonus.
Bonus. See you on the other side, waggers.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There was another one, if you don't mind.
Crazy no, shit. I got one more story, but let's hear the folklore.
There's one other one that I was always interested in that I thought I would look up, which is the proverbial saying that the moon is made of cheese, which I thought was like, where does that
yeah,
come from?
Yeah, why is too? That?
That seems to go pretty far back, in the different cultures, and it's indicative of, it became a sort of byword for somebody who was incredibly gullible. You know, incredibly credulous.
It's like, I've got a bridge to sell you or something.
Yeah, it's anybody who's a kind of a simpleton that would be like, would believe. And that one of some of the earliest stories was this idea that you would see the reflection of the moon in the water would look like a wheel of cheese.
Oh.
And so people would then think that, oh, and it's a little bit like diving into the water to get after the cheese. And that a lot of it is based in this, you know, in folklore, there's all these kinds of, like, they find all these kind of, it's really interesting in folklore that they get these types of stories. They'll find, like, a type of a story, and they'll categorize them, and there's, like, all these variations on a type of story. Uh-huh. So this is a type of folk story that I found as sort of the original, one of the original tellings of it from this Rabbi Rashi, who tells this kind of great story, which is, and this is in some Talmudic, you know, gathering.
Yeah, I was going to say, what time frame are we talking about?
And this
about?
Is the high ancient? Middle Ages, kind of late Middle Ages.
Okay.
A fox once craftily induced a wolf to go join people in their Sabbath preparations and share in the festivities. On his appearing in their midst, the people fell upon him with sticks and beat him. He went back determined to kill the fox, but the fox pleaded, "It is no fault of mine that you were beaten. They have a grudge against your father who once helped them preparing their banquet and consumed all their food." "And I was beaten for the wrong done my father?" cried the wolf. "Yes," replied the fox. "However," he continued, "come with me. I'll supply you with abundant food." He led him to a well, which had a beam across it, from either end of which hung a rope with a bucket attached. The fox entered the upper bucket, descended into the well, whilst the lower one was drawn up. "Where are you going?" asked the wolf. The fox, pointing to the cheese-like reflection of the moon, replied, "There's plenty of meat and cheese down here. Get in the other bucket. Come on down." The wolf did so, and as he descended, the fox was drawn up. "How am I going to get out?" said the wolf. "Aha," said the fox. "The righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. Is it not written, just balances, just weights?"
Nice.
So that's the type of story. That's the sort of genre of folktale that it comes from. And I thought that was really
cool. So the moon is like a symbol of getting suckered, basically.
Yeah, you're dumb enough to think that the moon is made out of cheese. So it's like, that's how you get nailed, which is cool. I loved that.
That is cool. I like these kind of like, and we should maybe do a show on this sometime where we look at like these patterns across cultures, like the moon in different folklores or—
Yeah, totally. Like, so please, you've indulged me long enough. What do you got?
Oh, I just had one more. It's not even like a story so much, but something for us to talk about, which is you and I were talking about this the other day. There were these Russian guys, I think you know their names, but in the 70s, they were hypothesizing that the moon might be a spacecraft, as we were saying, and that built by unknown beings. Do you remember those guys at all?
I did find this too. These guys are named Mikhail Vasin and Alexander Shcherbakov.
Okay. And I just thought it was cool that it's a kind of theory, which is that there are these ancient astronauts that basically made the moon or, you know, live inside the moon, and that they might in fact be our progenitors. That's kind of a cool story that you see every now and then, which is they're the original humans and they populated the Earth with their own DNA. And so we are the descendants of these moon people.
Oh, so cool.
Isn't that cool? And I guess like one theory was and there was actually this recent movie we were talking about, Moonfall, that just came out recently. Yeah, which is sort of about this. It is a premise.
Pretty pulpy movie.
It's not great art, but—
No, but it was fun.
That's never stopped us.
No, never, but it invites me.
Right. But what's cool about this idea is that there's a sort of like this weird intellectual backdrop to this idea of ancient astronauts creating us in their image. Uh-huh. And the backdrop is this tension between the sort of godless communist view, which was, you know, that there is no God and God didn't make us. We're not special. We're just the product of some kind of materialist, you know, cause and effect. It's either Darwinian or it's physics. Uh-huh. And I guess these guys really saw this as a critique of the Western, you know, religious view that somehow humans are special and made by God. And this whole argument that actually our ancestors lived somewhere else and just dropped off a little fucking DNA here. And that's all we are really. It's part of this bigger metaphysical debate.
Right. We're just a part of this kind of, really interesting. Isn't there, I mean, I remember reading there's sorts of like schools of thought that like, you know, maybe some meteorite hit the Earth that was carrying some kind of strange like bacteria on it, and that started life on the planet, or that something came, you know, which is a really—
That's the panspermia.
Yep. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Panspermia.
I need a moment. But yeah.
We need a show on panspermia.
Yeah, we told, is that what that is? Is that the idea that life is sort of, it's kind of dropped from somewhere else?
Yeah.
So I mean, bees are spreading. They're panspermic, I suppose. Is that what they're doing too?
Exactly. So one theory is that life originated here by some mechanical process, and the other is that it came from like on an asteroid or a comet or something like that. Yeah.
That's
and
both.
One last thing.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool. Is I mentioned this to you before, but I was lucky enough to meet the guy. His name is Sidney Fox.
Uh-huh.
I was a graduate student, and he was very old, and he was teaching a course. And he was one of the first people to examine the moon rocks from the Apollo missions. When they brought rocks back, this guy analyzed them, and he had a theory that life started in those like deep, like thermal vents deep in the ocean, and that you can create, like if you just get the elements together and enough heat, you get like a kind of proto-biology form.
Sure.
And so he was looking for evidence of these kind of microspheres that he called them on the rocks. He didn't find any evidence, but that's what he was looking for. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's like that's like the H.P. Lovecraft Color Out of Space, is that it's got the weird globules of life on the meteorite when it comes down. But that's really cool. Unbelievable.
Creepy.
I have one more thing.
Do it.
That I just discovered today.
There's never enough on the hollow moon.
I know, but this is really good. This isn't about the interior of the moon. This is very much about the surface of the moon.
Okay.
But I remember a few years ago becoming kind of fascinated by the notion that there's a whole burgeoning school of law that's space and air law. That's all this stuff about sort of like, which is hilarious. I mean, apparently down in down in at the University of Mississippi is the primary, is the like center of space law and air law.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to touch that. I'm just going to let that ride.
But it's fascinating because it's like, apparently it's a really complicated thing and it's a lot about rights
like
and
naval
space.
Shit.
And,
yeah.
But also just like satellites up there and stuff. But it was interesting to see that one of the trickiest aspects of space law is defining what space is. And that apparently the lower reaches of space, kind of everything up until kind of the edge of the atmosphere, there it's easier to regulate. But that once you get out into the rest of it, you get into these metaphysical questions of like, what is space? What is the nature?
Really?
What is the Earth's function as a planet and stuff like that, which I just thought was kind of interesting.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
I remember hearing a while ago that there's people selling property on the moon. I'd heard that Hilton Hotels had bought like a bunch of like property on the moon. Well, I thought I would investigate this and see, is this real? Went to look it up. Oh my God, dude. I found what I stumbled upon. This was the best. What I stumbled upon was a guy. Now the articles I saw about this are several years old, but the guy is still around because he's still got a website. A gentleman named Dennis Hope, the aptly named Dennis Hope, in 1980 declared himself the owner of the moon. He is an entrepreneur, a real estate entrepreneur from Nevada, which is, as he should be. He claims that he owns the moon because no nation state or governing body has disputed it. And because he found a loophole in the 1969 United Nations Outer Space Treaty, which stipulates that no nation can own anything in space. But he was
really?
Like, no, no nation.
And that's real. That's okay.
That's real.
But
that's
person.
Real. And he said, but it says nothing about individuals. So I own the moon. So he has claimed that he owns the moon. He sells real estate on the moon.
Clever bastard.
He has a lot of, very clever bastard. He claims he's the richest man anywhere because he owns all the shit, because he's the president of the galactic government, which covers the moon, Mercury, Mars, Venus, Jupiter's moon, Io, and Pluto. He also owns Pluto, which I was like, that could get complicated too. Exactly. That could get complicated. Apparently, he says in this one article I saw, Pluto costs, you could buy Pluto. You and I could buy Pluto from this guy for $250,000. Now, that was like 10 years ago. So
Holy shit. I
imagine it's more expensive. He threatened to sue the Chinese not too long ago for landing shit on his property.
He's the ultimate
get off my lawn guy. He's the ultimate like get your fucking car off my out of my driveway guy.
Get off my planet.
Well, he's got a whole thing. I mean, he's got a whole thing. He sells this stuff.
Oh my God. T-shirts.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, obviously probably people do it as a lark or whatever, but he's still around. He wants to be the first guy, private citizen on the moon. He plans to build a 2-mile by 2-mile wide pyramid on the moon.
It's got to be a pyramid.
But this led me to go, okay, I just got to look at this. And I went to another website. I'm not going to name it because I don't know if I should be doing this at all, but I'm going to read this because this was hilarious. This made me laugh so hard. This is on this website that's another lunar real estate website. And this is like a little sort of blurb on it that starts it off and it says, what would be greater than to own your own crater? How do you buy moon property? Choose from the historic Sea of Tranquility or the magnificent Land of Dreams. Budget-minded? The Sea of Vapors is perfectly priced.
The Sea of Vapors.
Prefer a mountaintop location? The Lunar Alps and Taurus Mountains offer sweeping views of the moon's landscape.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
There are more than a dozen spectacular regions currently available in parcels of 1 acre and up. I was like, that was literally what they were talking on this site.
Could you like put your credit card information and get like an acre? Right?
Totally. Oh my God, I mean, dude. It was hilarious. And it was just like, I loved that though.
That's hilarious.
The Sea of Vapors is perfectly priced. It's just hilariously like, and I suppose I picked up
some of the Sea of Vapors.
Hey, listen, sweetheart.
Great deal on the
Someday
Sea of Vapors.
Someday when I'm done and we're going to retire and move to the fucking Sea of Vapors.
Oh my God.
The Taurus Mountains. But I mean, talk about an amazing fucking con going on.
That sounds so American to me. Like,
yeah,
it's such
it
a great American project. Like, get
it
in.
Is. It is.
And just
it
start
is.
To exploit, you know, entrepreneur the shit out
the
of this.
The thing is, it reminded me that it reminded me that there's a Robert Heinlein short story called The Man Who Bought the Moon. And I haven't read it in years, but like a lot of Robert Heinlein, I remember being kind of a little
bit. Is there
bit
like a lot of like orgy sex in it?
No. I don't think there's a lot of like orgy sex in that one. But a lot of his stuff gets pretty like, it gets kind of dry and it goes on and on. But it's got that American libertarian kind of like, I can own the goddamn moon if I want to. Exactly. If I want to buy the moon, I can buy the goddamn moon if I want to. If I want to have 15 wives and live on a compound in fucking Idaho, I mean, it was like very much like, it was, so it's definitely, like you say, you're absolutely right. It's such an American phenomenon.
It's like it's one of the last great frontiers. So you can just expand out, just like we did in this country, pushing westward, you know, why not the moon?
Totally.
But I think you have to, like, I think philosophically, you can't have, I could be wrong about this, but I believe the definition of private property that like John Locke was arguing for and that all the founding fathers believed in was you have to mix your labor with the land in order to make it yours, in order to claim it. You have to do something. You have to dig a ditch. You have to build something.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
You have to apply yourself to the land to make it
Mix
yours.
Mix some sweat with the land, and then you can claim it.
So Mr. Hope has, it's
yeah,
not
fuck
his.
Fuck this guy.
Unless he gets his ass up to the moon and digs a septic tank somewhere, it's not his. That's interesting. That's an interesting concept. I'd never heard that. That's really cool, actually. Huh, that makes sense, actually. That's a kind of interesting definition of private property. Wow.
Because otherwise it is whatever you say it is, which is what our man Hope is saying, is like, I just claiming this. But you really can't just claim anything because...
Yeah. Well, not according to a lot of people. Not according to a lot of people. You sure as hell can. Yeah, I mean, you sure can claim whatever the hell you want. I mean, yeah, sure. I can blame myself the king of bars.
But legally, do you have to like mix? Do you have to do a project? I wonder legally.
To make it yours, like literally.
Yeah, the philosophy view is one thing.
Probably, but I mean, this guy, I mean, yeah, I was reading all these people in the UN and all these sort of, you know, it's all these lawyers, space lawyers down in Mississippi who are like, imagine those kind of like, yeah, those kind of like
barbecues and shit.
Yeah, kind of like Atticus Finch, like, you know, kind of like all sort of like, I declare that you cannot establish a space on the moon. So, you know, just kind of like down there. But
they got a whiskey still in the back, but they're fucking working on the
moonshine. There you go. Moonshine.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, beautiful. Boy. Beautiful. Here we go. Full circle. But there's a lot of people going, he can't do this. I'm like, you don't need, I mean, yes, he can't do this, but he kind of can.
But he is doing it. Yeah.
And he's doing it and he kind of can. I mean, you know, it's like, who knows at some point that he's not going to sue somebody for.
Oh my God.
For building something on the moon. But I don't know why I can't just declare myself the king of Neptune right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We should make a campaign.
In fact,
let's do it right now.
In fact, you know what? I am the king of Neptune. And I am,
I pledge my fealty to you, man.
Thank you.
Good. Absolutely.
And I hope that everybody within the sound of my voice right now will go down on one knee and pledge fealty to me, the king of Neptune. Because that's, you know what we should do a thing about are micronations sometime, or those people who are like, my backyard is the kingdom of Montana.
And I'm not governed by your laws or whatever. Yeah,
I don't need your fucking laws. But it's interesting because, again, it's that thing of the moon is this place of sort of banishment and madness and freedom. And like, it's interesting. There's a great thing. There's a Philip K. Dick novel, I think, called Time Out of Joint, in which there's a whole thing about this. This guy discovers that there's a war between the moon and Earth. And the moon has become this kind of libertarian paradise. These people have kind of gone there and they're like living free, live free or die. It's like New Hampshire up on the moon. And that they're sort of like, so it's interesting. The moon has all this sort of seductive, weird qualities.
Like you can sort of picture Elon Musk, you know, who also has this kind of libertarian streak in him.
Totally.
And he's just trying to use technology and money to do, I mean, he may do amazing things.
Yeah,
we don't
know
yet, you know. He
may
colonize Mars. We don't know.
Yes,
but
sure.
It's part of that sort of American project.
But it is. So. It is that American project. But he's also going to probably let people build fucking, you know, bowling alleys on the moon, which is cool. Not a bad idea.
bowling alleys on the moon.
Bowling alleys on the moon. Well, there certainly will be bowling alleys on Neptune if I have anything to say about it. And so, oh my God.
Oh, that was fun. That
was quite a tour. There was a lot there, my friend. Yeah, absolutely. That was a good one.
That was really fun.
That was a good one. Anyway, thanks everybody for putting up with that for a while.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
That was rich.
That was an excellent time. Thank you for joining us on the Chinwag. Neptunians. All my fellow Neptunians tuning in.
Yeah, we need some Neptune. Paul is the emperor of Neptune swag. I don't know what exactly, but it would be great.
We need little paper crowns, like those Burger King crowns. Little tridents. Little like
tridents.
Poseidon tridents and stuff like that. Run around with those little fish scale outfits and stuff like that. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for joining us. And
yes, thank you, everybody. That was fun.
That's this Chinwag. And as always, you know, rate us and do all the good stuff.
And most importantly, wag on.
Wag on.
Chinwag is a production of Treefort Media and Touchy Feely Films, hosted and executive produced by Paul Giamatti and Stephen Asma. Executive producers for Treefort are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman. Dan Carey is executive producer for Touchy Feely. Our series producer is Rachel Whitley Bernstein. Original theme music by Luke Topp, with additional music by Via Mardot. Oscar Guido is our executive in charge of production. Tom Monahan is head of audio for Treefort. Audio production supervision by Matt Dyson. Editing and mixing by Jeff Neal. Animation created by Alex Sokol. Research assistance by Aiden Brooks. Lastly, for more information, go to chinwagpod.fm and find us on Instagram or TikTok at chinwagpod or on Twitter at chinwag_pod.